Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's Black Friday, I hear.
The blackest of Fridays.
I'm still wearing my pajamas, so you can tell that I did not bust down any doors at 5 a.m.
Probably for the best. Those doors. They get you back somehow.
They always do, especially the sliding ones. They don't want to be busted down, really. They just get
Or
out of your way.
the revolving ones, those guys are. Yeah, what goes around comes around, I guess.
You don't go outside for Black Friday, do you?
I go outside. I mean, I just went to like the grocery store,
Oh,
but
okay. Do they have any great Black Friday deals at the grocery store?
surprisingly, no, I don't think so.
Oh, all right. Well,
But, you need milk sometimes, and there you go.
calendar demands that we do a Black Friday edition. Good news, everybody. This episode is half off.
Does that mean it's like 15 minutes or
It's maybe we'll see.
you pay the same price, but you get half the content. That's how it works.
Yeah. So what's going on?
No, not much. It's weird the day after Thanksgiving, right? Because I think it's one of those days that people what they're doing varies immensely, right? Some people are
Right.
traveling, some people are chilling at home. My wife went to work today.
Yeah,
You know?
it is technically for a lot of people, it is technically a weekday, which is one of the dumb things about Thanksgiving being on a Thursday, is it's great if it's a 4-day weekend, but it's not so great if you just go back to work on Friday and work a dumb floating around dumb old Friday, and then yeah, I've done
Well,
that. It's dumb.
she went in part by choice because she was like, oh, there'll be no one there today. I can get so much
That's
done.
true.
And
That's
it's like,
the
all right,
case.
yeah, you do what you
Case
got to do.
four. Yeah.
For me, it's basically, it feels like most other Fridays. I took it a little bit more leisurely probably this morning, but like, I don't know, I'm still doing stuff. I'm sitting home by myself. I'm gonna take care of some stuff that I could get done, and more or less feels like kind of my normal work
All
day.
right. Well, you sent me a note saying, "Are we going to record?" And I got it like 45 minutes later because I wasn't even. I'm totally not on that. I have so Lauren's home, Jamie's home for Thanksgiving. We have family who are not staying here, but they'll be over here in a little bit. So there's a lot. This is not a usual Friday for me, I guess is what I'm saying. But you talking to you makes it a little more usual. How about that?
It's an unusual Friday, I guess.
Something like that. Something like that. We sent out our newsletter this week. That was nice.
It was nice.
I got to write about those crazy Amazon catalogs, which the more I hear from people and the more I think about it, I start to think that they had a guaranteed rate base, basically a guaranteed number that they said to deliver, and so that they delivered them widely. But I'm still trying to figure that one out, like why they did it the way they did it. It because they sent catalogs out to lots of people who are not relevant at all. I don't know. I don't know what lessons to take from it, but I'm fascinated by the idea that a company that knows should know a huge amount about me based on my purchases sent me a catalog full of stuff for little kids because I don't have any of those. It's like completely inappropriate. And they should know. They absolutely know the demographics of my house based on our purchases over the last 15 years.
Yeah, and I told you that when I read your story, I was like, oh, we also got one of those
Yeah.
catalogs. And Kat was like, well, what if they saw our wedding registry that we had with them back in July and they decided to capitalize on that? And I was like, either way, that seems a bit jumping the
You're
gun.
not, yeah, either way, you're not buying presents for kids, 3 to 12
Yeah, but I don't know, maybe they
this Christmas.
figure. Do you think there's a demographic thing where they figure like maybe you have friends who have kids that need toys or
I don't know. It is very weird. And then
relatives?
on top of that, the real clincher for me is that we got that the fashion catalog for adults that was addressed to Tiff Arment, care of me, because she bought LaCroix for top four and had it shipped to my house, which is
LaCroix
like
means fashion, which means.
That is so baffling, because that means that they why did they choose that one? Like, if they want to send it to Tiff, they've got to know that that's not Tiff's address. And if they want to send it to me, they got to know that is a thing that came from out of an order for Tiff. So it doesn't make any sense. Is it like a lottery? Do you just win fabulous catalogs? I don't know. It's anyway, I had that when we got it. Lauren wanted to recycle it, and I was like, no. I got to write something about that, because it doesn't make any sense at all.
Free publicity for you, Amazon.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, for the catalog that you already got?
I don't know how that works. That seems not very efficient. But
and I mean, all of my years working in print, you know, as print declined, everybody would do these, like, pump you up with how powerful print is for things. And there's truth in that. And I think that's why Amazon is doing it. So I was kind of amused to see that sleek, glossy, you know, catalog, heavy stock paper. They spent a lot of money on it. And, you know, and then they use their own technology for it. Like, if you hold a camera up to a product on it, it immediately identifies it and takes you to that page. Mm-hmm. And again, presumably, it now has data about how that was a successful click, basically, out of the catalog, because that's the funny thing, right, is that they can't measure opens on a catalog. They can't do that.
Exactly.
There are no stats that they can gather from that.
Yeah, that seems it seems very counterintuitive to the way that their business model works.
Now,
but, you know.
Last week we talked about your wiki, and it was in the newsletter, so I can't ask you about the wiki again, other than to say that I think I consider you writing about the wiki in A Thing We Like as cheating.
Well,
we alternate on A Thing We Like and the application folder. And I get A Thing We Like, and I'll tell you, every other month when I'm up for it. Now that it's the end of the year, maybe we'll change those for next year.
I was thinking it might be time to
it's been, because we've done that for a couple of years, so maybe it's time to swap in some new concepts. But every other month when I get that, I think, I don't like anything. I hate everything. what am I going to write about? And so
that's okay, because every time I get application folder, I'm like, oh my God, are there any pieces of software that I
that I haven't written about? Yeah.
Or that everybody else does? I like notes, you know? Like, it's not like I can write about
there you
stuff.
Go.
All the programs I use are boring programs that everybody uses or that, you know, are included with my phone, and I'm not going to write about those. So, and James Thompson does not pay me enough to write about pCalc every month.
No. Okay, well, maybe we should change those. Anyway, it was nice to read about the wiki, even though you were cheating. And that's also in the newsletter. So that's
in case that people didn't get their fill of wikis when we talked about it on the podcast.
That's good. Yeah. Well, that was the podcast where I edited part of your wiki, which was, I was amused because you didn't even get into that. You're like, it's just me in there.
It's like, well, who knows? I don't know. You could be changing things left and right, and I would never
know. Change the canon of your, you probably figure that one out. You'd probably be like, is that me or
that?
And then you look at the history and it's all you, because it's a one user wiki.
Yeah, that's the worst part. That's the worst part. Yeah, Well, there are weaknesses in this plan.
Yeah, I promise not to sabotage your wiki, Dan.
Thank you.
There's a 21st century promise, if ever there was one.
I need it. The assurances are important.
Oh, well, let's see what else. I don't even remember what else I wrote for that newsletter. It came out in a big burst earlier this week. It was actually pretty good. I had a couple incredibly productive days. I think my brain could sense the impending lack of productivity for the week. And so I did a lot of, plus I'm like cleaning up the house and moving things around. I hung some pictures in my office again. So, you know, then you're getting company and you kind of don't want things to be a mess and all that. So
right.
It was a busy, this is such a weird week. And then it's a holiday season again, which is weird, although shorter than usual because Thanksgiving is later than usual.
Right.
But still, we're about to enter the, you know, 4 weeks of three plus weeks of holiday madness.
Yeah. It kind of all starts to blur together. And then, you know, the Christmas into New Year's transition, and all of a sudden it's January and you're like, oh my God, it's 2020. What is happening?
Yeah. It's, here we are, like, just on the treadmill. It's like, I know how this goes. I was talking to Roman, yours and my editor at Macworld, about my end of the year columns. And I realized I'm kind of at the point where it's kind of great. I'm almost at the point of the year where my next four columns write themselves because I've set up this cycle now where I do like a looking back on my wish list predictions thing from last year, and then here are my predictions for next year kind of articles. And that's usually good for like three or four columns right at the end of the year, which is good because like they're low power and they take a week off after Christmas and stuff like that. So it's good to get that stuff in there. But it's just, you know, I remember when I just wrote those columns and here we are again.
I know. The cycle never ends.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
There was this morning, I did do a quick post on that Johnny Ive has been removed from the Apple's bio page, which is something that we all knew was coming because he, you know, announced his departure way back in, what was it, like April or May? It was a while ago.
June. It's the long goodbye. This is like the last step of the long goodbye of Johnny Ive.
Yeah,
that guy.
It's still not gone though.
That guy has been working at Apple for so long that like nobody should work for the same company for quite that long. That's like, you know, he's earned it.
7 years, they said, I think.
He, you know, yeah, because he was designing like before Jobs came back.
Right.
He was
right.
Designing systems. Like you can see his work, his experimentation with plastic items in like the beige G3 with its little plastic triangle thing. And he worked on the 20th anniversary Mac and like, yeah, some, and the eMate, right?
Yeah.
The eMate has translucent plastic parts to it. That's the Newton laptop. And hey, they made a Newton laptop. They need to make, that's a calm idea. I should make lessons of the eMate for the iPad laptop. But anyway, so talk about a run, like just a spectacular amount of time and so much accomplished. And, you know, he should have probably left 5 years ago because he had, there were no more lands for him to conquer.
Right. Yes.
But I think in some ways, maybe he did, right? Like I think Steve Jobs' death meant that Apple like really, really, really needed him to be there and be present and aid in the transition. And that probably extended his time in a way, but he's been clearly like, there was that profile, what, 2 years ago that talked about him living in England and also doing a lot of work in his house in San Francisco. And then sometimes coming down to Cupertino and like, it's very clearly like, he reached that position, which is we want as much of you as you're willing to give. And we know that's not a lot. And if you were anybody else, we would not accept it. But with you, we will literally take whatever scraps you can give us of your energy. And I don't know. I mean, that's not a particularly fun thing, I think, for him either, to be kind of like in, but not in.
I think it's interesting, as I noted in the little, you know, post I wrote, that this is probably then the first time in decades that there is no one on Apple's leadership page that has design anywhere in their title, which is,
yeah, I mean, it predates the leadership page for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So like, because it's his replacements both report to Jeff Williams, who is sort of, we've talked, I think, before about how Williams has stepped into that like kind of chief of product role, not officially, but like that's clearly kind of where he is. And I heard you and Mike talking a little bit on Upgrade this week about succession planning for Tim. And I was, you know, listening in the car and I was like, guys, it's Jeff Williams. Come on. It's clearly Jeff Williams.
Sure.
And he seems to be the heir apparent. I don't think that's happening anytime soon necessarily, but you know, he seems to be coming up through the ranks in the same way that Tim did. And so,
well, that's the thing about succession planning is that it's not always about like who will take the crown in 20 years. Some of it is also like what will happen if there's a catastrophic thing. Like,
sure.
You know, Steve Jobs ended up with the pancreatic cancer that does not kill you very, very quickly. But you know, that's a good example of like, he could have been gone in a month or two. And what would Apple have done? And, you know, that could always happen. Like, tomorrow is not guaranteed to anyone. So, like, you need to have the backup plan of, like, what if something happens to Tim Cook, who takes over at Apple? And then you've also got the long term. And I think you're right. I think he's very clearly the guy who's being groomed for it. I just had that moment of thinking, too, like the unique challenge of feeling like no one from outside the company will get the company. And so you have to groom people on the inside for these positions because it's very hard. I mean, it happens, but it's very hard. And I think it takes time for people. We'll see how it goes, but Ginandria, the AI guy, he's a hire from outside who is senior. But so many of the people on Apple's leadership page are people who are, have come up through the ranks at Apple or who have been at Apple a long, long, long time and built up their expertise there.
Right.
And understanding of the culture.
When you were talking about that, the other thing that I was thinking of, and I'm trying to look up his name now because this is where he has gone, is if you remember, there was when Ron Johnson left, they replaced him with that British guy.
Oh yeah,
John Brownlee. That's how long he lasted.
It's the guy from that terrible UK retailer.
Right, and you know that's an example of a case where something was a bad fit.
Right,
and they tried to bring someone in from the outside, and that person did not understand the way that the retail operation was supposed to work.
And with Angela Ahrens, I think they got somebody from the outside who they felt was sort of simpatico in some ways, but also they wanted her to be in charge of a thing that they wanted to change. And it's telling that she was replaced by essentially the head of HR, right?
Yeah.
Like somebody from the inside. And there, I mean, the PSMI thing and Johnny Srouji and like doing the chips, like, those are people who came from the outside, but they've also been there a long time now, and they've like built up a subculture within the greater Apple culture. But for like the leadership positions, the very top positions, Apple, I would argue that you can't become the CEO of Apple if you haven't spent, 5 to 10 years at Apple. Like, I just don't think you could be successful at it. I think it would be a disaster.
But it's hard to look too much into org charts and like sort of do the tea leaf thing. But like, I think it is interesting the lack of somebody at sort of the top level thinking about design, or if you want to think about design being kind of subsidiary to operations/product now, in the same way that retail is run by the same person who runs HR. It is an interesting. It feels like circling the wagons a little bit to me, and not in a bad way necessarily, but just in terms of like solidifying the culture and the institution right now.
Right.
And it's an interesting move for Apple to take. I mean, retail was something where they've been incredibly successful, but it's also something that has, I think, increasingly started to see some criticism, especially from, sort of their more diehard portions of the fan base. Where, people have gotten frustrated with their experiences in retail because in some ways they've veered so far from like, you guys are a store where I want to go in and I want to get my needs met and I don't want to be here to hang out. Like,
no, but we're a grove now. We're a grove.
Yeah, right. No, I don't need a bunch of trees in my store. I just need to get my computer fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of that, I think there's always been there because the people who go to the Apple store to get their computer fixed are frustrated and like, I get it, but I think also some of it is accurate and that some of Angela's, it's perceived at least as Angela Ahrens's, initiatives, although I think that she did them with the full approval and support, and then the concept changed underneath. That's my concept. I'm going to stick to it. By the way, I have heard through the grapevine, again, through my highly placed retail sources, it's not what it is, but definitely sounds like that thing that Angela Ahrens was so proud of launching and that they trumpeted the whole new version of the Today at Apple stuff, like that corporate support for that is extremely low. That,
right.
They launched it, but it turns out that maybe that was much more of a, this is how we used to view the Apple store and we're changing our priorities kind of thing. So they went to the effort of launching it, but it sounds like there's not a lot of actual support for it inside Apple retail. So there's a real retrenchment going on there. And I think, we've talked about it before, but it's the idea that you can be, when you're riding really high and you're just printing money, you have this ability to do all of this aspirational stuff. And then, you know, things get a little bit tighter and you say, well, no, actually what we need to do is sell product in our stores, which of course they do. But it's a hard moment to say this aspirational stuff that's above and beyond, we're actually going to not focus on because, you know, we need to be even better at moving product. So
right.
It's a real challenge. Hey, we're back to Black Friday now, aren't we?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
All the way back around.
All the way back to the day.
I assume Apple has some very, very poor deals on something now.
Gift cards, I think I saw. But what's interesting this year, more than previous years, or I guess increasingly the case with Apple, is that there are deals on Apple products through other places.
Sure.
Which used to not even be a thing. But since Apple went back, you know, since Apple and Amazon patched stuff up, especially a year or two ago, it seems like, you know, we've talked in the past too, just in generally, about how you can find better deals on Apple products on Amazon nowadays.
For sure.
And I think that's also true in other places on Black Friday. But yeah, Apple itself does not make
$9.99 MacBook Air on Amazon, you know, and shaved $100 off. And I think, and this is, you know, just a theory, but I feel like when they cranked up the prices of everything a couple of years ago, part of that was giving them the ability to market with deals, because I think they felt like their prices were not willing to go down, and that was their strategy. And they moved to a new strategy, which is to price it a little higher and then offer deals.
Right.
They have a little more room in their margin now to do things like have the Amazon discounted deals and stuff like that, which is good.
I've also seen the HomePod has been down to like $200, which is a fascinating, that is cheap. That is a cheap, it's not cheap in the sense that it's a inexpensive product. It's cheap in the sense that the retail price for that is $350. That's like, you know, close to half off, you know? So that's an interesting data point just in terms of that product. I don't know where they're going with it, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah, I like the product, and the problem is always the price. So, you know, getting it cheap makes it a much better value, makes it much more of a likely thing. But the question is, have they decided that they can make it for that price and that's a good price? Or is it really like, oh God, we made so many of these and nobody wants them and we are desperate to just unload them and walk away and replace it with something else or do nothing or I don't know what. It's funny how everybody was like, oh, Apple really needs to do its own speaker and, you know, it needs to do it. And we absolutely said that. And then the HomePod comes out and it's like, well, that ended that conversation.
Right? That's the thing, like, it felt weirdly sullen in some ways where they're like, fine, you want a speaker? Fine. Here's a speaker. It's $350. It doesn't do much.
Yeah.
Enjoy. And we're like,
yeah.
All right. Well, I guess they answered the question, just not well.
Yeah.
And you know, I've got a couple of them here and there are things I like about them. There are things I've complained about them. I think the biggest complaint I have with them is that it doesn't seem like Apple is committed to actually furthering it as a platform. It seems like it wanted to put its flag in the ground and be like, we've got it. We're moving on.
And then moving on. Yeah. And the pace of the software, like, it had so many glaring deficiencies and they have addressed some of them.
But very slowly.
And even now, like, they've got the... also, there's this feeling like maybe they missed their shot. Like, the multi-user support is apparently there now, but like, I have not. First off, the software update, when I was like, the software updates were rolling, I was like, all right, I want to try this new HomePod stuff. I was like, no, it's not actually ready. Like, it came later, and now it's there. And it's like, you know, have I set that up? No, I haven't.
Same here, because I've had the Ahoy telephone turned off on them because I every time I turned it on for a week or two, it would just start getting false positives all over the place, and I would get really irritated, so I turned it off.
Yeah, there's at sporting events on TV, they have a thing where they do a little ad play that is, Ahoy Telephone, tell me about this thing, right? And it's just, it's an ad for Apple's assistant. And, you know, there are Amazon ads that don't trigger my Amazon assistant, but the Apple in-game thing that they do triggers it every time. So my HomePod kicks out an answer to the dumb question that they're asking about some sporting something, and then I'm shouting at it to stop, and it's yeah. But we used it yesterday. I was playing music the whole day. The HomePods were, and they sounded great, and it was nice. And I mean, they're nice. I use those for my music in my living room now, but and I do have the trigger turned back on because the new software update allows you to opt out of all the things. And so I turned it back on for now. And I haven't had as many false positives as I have had in the past, but I don't know. It's
mine live in my office. And so my wife never uses them.
Yeah. Like, and we'll see where they go. I mean, I think that's the real question is, do they think that there's a product category here at all? And if there is, you know, what is their take on it? And because it's not that it's a bad product, but you're right. It feels a little more like a check mark, and then they kind of walk away and the price was wrong. And as opposed to my iPod Hi-Fi, which has an auxiliary jack, so it's still useful to me and I use it every day, 13 years after it was introduced, these things, that's the other part about it is, are they are very specific, no jacks, Wi-Fi devices. It's like, hopefully they'll be supported for a long time to come. But I even if Apple like kind of shrugs and gives up on them, I don't even know about that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I agree. It's in some ways it feels like an epitome of an Apple product that is, you know, like beautifully designed and really not thinking about, you know, how could it fail? So why would we think about what would you do with it after we stop supporting it?
Right.
It just has like the sort of platonic ideal thing going for it that is great if it's supported and they're behind it. But if they're not, it does just end up being a couple of big paperweights. And like I wrote a while back, I'm annoyed that I can't use them as my Mac speakers. I don't know why,
right.
But yeah, they just didn't bother. And it's like, well, that feels crappy. Like,
well, I'm
annoyed. All your products.
I'm annoyed that Apple has designed them to be featureless unless you're basically standing high above them looking down at them.
Yeah.
And so there's no feedback that they're working or that they're being triggered or anything like that unless you're above them and they're placed down low and you're able to look down low, which my placement in the house is basically I never am looking at them. So. And then when I come over to them and want to adjust the volume, I have to, like, the one on the piano, I have to stand on my tippy toes just to see where the little volume controls are. It's stupid.
I get annoyed. So I really was looking forward to the handoff feature for the music.
Right.
Which
I've
used.
Never gotten that to work.
It's very buggy. It doesn't, in the converse of your Apple philosophy, it doesn't just work. Which is to say, I've gotten it to work, but you have to be like super precise and like you don't get stupid. And my favorite thing is occasionally I will like be trying to like bring it closer. And the first couple times I used it, I would accidentally like tap the phone on the top, like make
visible,
and it would start playing whatever was last on the HomePod.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, oh, this is a disaster. Like, this is so bad.
And I think the one time that I tried it and I thought I got a trigger, what ended up happening was that it played out of the one HomePod.
Oh yeah, I had that too.
But not it's a stereo pair.
And
the other one's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just going to sit over here and be quiet. What are you doing?
I have gotten it to work, but it is definitely a feature that works like no better than 50% of the time. And I'm like, why? Why?
Yeah.
Why does it work no better than 50% of the time, guys?
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving, HomePod.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, well, I won't be buying another one. Let's put it that way. You got me twice, guys.
Fair.
You got me twice.
Fair.
But no longer.
Well, yeah, I think that's enough for Black Friday, you and me.
Sure.
So happy Thanksgiving to you a day late, and to all those out there who celebrate or celebrated it. Happy Thanksgiving a month late to the Canadians. And next week we'll be in the teeth of it. They'll be like, we'll be putting up the tree and lighting the lights, and I don't even know what else goes on. But
wreath and making cookies, you know,
all of that stuff. All of that stuff is going to happen.
Looking forward to it.
But that'll be next week. And until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.